From Heaven with Love. Chapter 74. The Awesome Struggle in Gethsemane. With his disciples the Savior made his way to the Garden of Gethsemane. The Passover moon shone from a cloudless sky. As he neared Gethsemane, he became strangely silent. Throughout his life on earth he had walked in the light of God's presence. But now he was numbered with the transgressors. The guilt of fallen humanity he must bear. So great was its weight that he was tempted to fear it would shut him out forever from his Father's love. He exclaimed, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death." Never before had the disciples seen their master so utterly sad. His form swayed as if he were about to fall. On reaching the garden, the disciples looked anxiously for his usual place of retirement, that their master might rest. Twice his companions supported him, or he would have fallen. Near the entrance, Jesus left all but three of the disciples, bidding them pray for themselves and for him. With Peter, James, and John, he entered its secluded recesses. In his great struggle, Christ desired their presence near him. Often they had passed the night with him in this retreat. After a season of prayer, they would sleep undisturbed until he awoke them in the morning to go forth anew to labor. Now he desired them to spend the night with him in prayer, yet could not bear that even they should witness the agony he was to endure. "Tarry ye here," Jesus said, "and watch with me." He went a little distance, not so far but that they could both see and hear him, and fell prostrate on the ground. He felt that by sin he was being separated from his Father. The gulf was so broad, so black, so deep, that his spirit shuddered before it. This agony he must not exert his divine power to escape. As man he must suffer the consequences of man's sin. As man he must endure the wrath of God against transgression. The terrible temptation Christ was now standing in a different attitude from that in which he had ever stood before. As the substitute for man, Christ was suffering under divine justice. Hitherto he had been an intercessor for others. Now he longed to have an intercessor for himself. As Christ felt his unity with the Father broken up, he feared that in his human nature he would be unable to endure the conflict. The tempter had come for the last fearful struggle. If he failed here, the kingdom of the world would finally become Christ's and he himself would be overthrown. But if Christ could be overcome, the earth would become Satan's kingdom, and the human race would be forever in his power. Satan told Christ that if he became the surety for a sinful world, he would be identified with Satan's kingdom and nevermore be one with God. And what was to be gained by this sacrifice? Satan pressed the situation on the Redeemer. "The people who claim to be above all others in spiritual advantages are seeking to destroy you. One of your own disciples will betray you. One of your most zealous followers will deny you. All will forsake you. That those whom he loved so much should unite in the plots of Satan, pierced Christ's soul. The conflict was terrible. The sins of men weighed heavily on Christ, and the sense of God's wrath against sin was crushing out his life. In his agony he clung to the cold ground, as if to prevent himself from being drawn farther from God. From his pale lips came the bitter cry, "O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me." Yet even now he added, "Nevertheless not as I will, but as thou wilt." Jesus hungered for human sympathy. The human heart longs for sympathy in suffering. This longing Christ felt to the very depths of his being. He came to his disciples yearning to hear some words of comfort. He longed to know that they were praying for him and for themselves. How dark seemed the malignity of sin! Terrible was the temptation to let the human race bear its own guilt, while he stood innocent before God. If he could only know that his disciples appreciated this, he would be strengthened. But he findeth them asleep. Had he found them seeking refuge in God, that satanic agencies might not prevail over them, he would have been comforted. But they had not heeded the warning, "Watch and pray." They had not intended to forsake their Lord, but they seemed paralyzed by a stupor which they might have shaken off if they had continued pleading with God. When the Savior was most in need of their prayers, they were asleep. The disciples awakened at the voice of Jesus, but they hardly knew him. His face was so changed by anguish. Addressing Peter, Jesus said, "Simon, sleepest thou? Couldest thou not watch 1 hour? Watch ye and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. The spirit truly is ready, but the flesh is weak." Jesus feared they would not be able to endure the test of his betrayal and death. Again the Son of God was seized with superhuman agony, and fainting and exhausted, he staggered back to the place of his former struggle. His suffering was even greater than before. His sweat was as it were great drops of blood falling down to the ground. The cypress and palm trees were the silent witnesses of his anguish. From their leafy branches dropped heavy dew on his stricken form, as if nature wept over its author wrestling alone with the powers of darkness. A short time before, Jesus had stood like a mighty cedar, withstanding the storm of opposition that spent its fury on him. Now he was like a reed beaten and bent by the angry storm. As one already glorified, he had claimed oneness with God. Now his voice was heard on the still evening air, full of human anguish, "O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done." Again Jesus felt a longing for some words from his disciples which would break the spell of darkness that well nigh overpowered him. But their eyes were heavy. Neither wist they what to answer him. They saw his face marked with the bloody sweat of agony, but his anguish of mind they could not understand. His visage was so marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. When the world's fate trembled in the balance turning away, Jesus sought again his retreat, and fell prostrate. The humanity of the Son of God trembled in that trying hour. The awful moment to decide the destiny of the world had come. The fate of humanity trembled in the balance. Christ might even now refuse to drink the cup apportioned to guilty man. He might wipe the bloody sweat from his brow and leave man to perish in his iniquity. He might say, "Let the transgressor receive the penalty of his sin, and I will go back to my Father." Will the innocent suffer the consequences of the curse of sin, to save the guilty? "O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done." 3 times has he shrunk from the last, crowning sacrifice. But now he sees that the human race is helpless. He sees the power of sin. The woes of a doomed world rise before him. He beholds its impending fate, and his decision is made. He will save man at any cost to himself. He has left the courts of heaven to save the one world that has fallen by transgression. And he will not turn from his mission. Having made the decision, he fell dying to the ground. Where now were his disciples, to place their hands beneath the head of their fainting master? The Savior trod the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with him. But God suffered with his Son. Angels beheld the Savior's agony. There was silence in heaven. No harp was touched. The angelic host in silent grief watched the Father separating his beams of light, love, and glory from his beloved Son. Satan and his confederacy of evil watched intently. What answer would come to Christ's thrice repeated prayer? In this awful crisis, when the mysterious cup trembled in the hand of the sufferer, the mighty angel who stands in God's presence came to the side of Christ. The angel came not to take the cup from Christ's hand, but to strengthen him with the assurance of his Father's love. He assured him that his death would result in the utter discomfiture of Satan, and that the kingdom of this world would be given to the saints of the Most High. He told him that he would see a multitude of the human race saved, eternally saved. How Christ's prayer was answered. Christ's agony did not cease, but his depression and discouragement left him. The storm had not abated, but he was strengthened to meet its fury. A heavenly peace rested on his blood-stained face. He had borne that which no human being could ever bear. For he had tasted the sufferings of death for every man. The sleeping disciples, suddenly awakened, saw the angel. They heard his voice speaking words of comfort and hope to the Savior. Now they had no further fear for their master. He was under the care of God. Again the disciples yielded to the strange stupor that overpowered them, And again Jesus found them sleeping. Looking sorrowfully on them, Jesus said, "Sleep on now, and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners." Even as he spoke, he heard the footsteps of the mob in search of him, and said, "Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me." No traces of his recent agony were visible as Jesus stepped forth to meet his betrayer. "Whom seek ye?" They answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus replied, "I am he." As these words were spoken, the angel who had ministered to Jesus moved between him and the mob. A divine light illuminated the Savior's face. In the presence of this divine glory, the murderous throng staggered back. Even Judas fell to the ground. The angel withdrew, and the light faded away. Jesus had opportunity to escape, but he remained in the midst of that hardened band, now prostrate and helpless at his feet. But quickly the scene changed. The Roman soldiers, the priests, and Judas gathered about Christ, fearful that he would escape. They had had evidence that he who stood before them was the Son of God, but they would not be convinced. To the question, "Whom seek ye?" Again they answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." The Savior then said, "I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go their way," pointing to the disciples. For them he was ready to sacrifice himself. Judas the betrayer did not forget the part he was to act. To the pursuers of Jesus he had given a sign, saying, "Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast." Now, coming close to Jesus, he took his hand as a familiar friend. With the words, "Hail, Master," he kissed him repeatedly, and appeared to weep as if in sympathy with him in his peril. Jesus said, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" His voice trembling with sorrow, he added, "Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss?" This appeal should have aroused the conscience of the betrayer, but honor and human tenderness had forsaken him. He had given himself up to Satan and had no power to resist him. Jesus did not refuse the traitor's kiss. The mob now laid hold of Jesus, and proceeded to bind those hands that had ever been employed in doing good. The disciples were disappointed and indignant as they saw the cords brought forward to bind the hands of him whom they loved. Peter in anger drew his sword and cut off an ear of the high priest's servant. When Jesus saw what was done, he released his hands, though held firmly by the Roman soldiers, and saying, "Suffer ye thus far," he touched the wounded ear, and it was instantly made whole. He then said to Peter, "Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? A legion in place of each disciple." Oh, why, the disciples thought, does he not save himself and us? Answering their unspoken thought, he added, "But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" The wily priests and elders had joined the temple police and rabble in following Judas to Gethsemane. What a company for those dignitaries to unite with, a mob armed with all kinds of implements, as if in pursuit of a wild beast. Turning to the priests and elders, Christ spoke words they would never forget, "You come out against me with swords and staves as you would against a thief or a robber. Day by day I sat teaching in the temple. You had every opportunity of laying hands on me, and you did nothing. The night is better suited to your work. This is your hour, and the power of darkness." The disciples were terrified as they saw Jesus permit himself to be taken and bound. They were offended that he should suffer this humiliation to himself and them. They could not understand his conduct, and they blamed him for submitting. In their indignation and fear, Peter proposed that they save themselves. Following this suggestion, they all forsook him, and fled.